So tonight we will continue with chapter 43. The people seem to be drinking. Krishna and Balaram with their eyes, licking them with their tongues, smelling them with their nostrils, and embracing them with their arms. Reminded of the Lord's beauty, character, charm, and bravery, the members of the audience began describing these features to one another according to what they had seen and heard. What of a bundle?
Naturally, those who assembled in the Mathura for the wrestling festival had heard the latest news of Krishna's and Balarama's acquaintances in the city. How the Lord had broken the sacrificial bow, defeated the police, and killed the elephant Kaulyambhya. And now that the people were seeing Krishna and Balarama enter the arena, their greatest expectations were confirmed. Krishna is the embodiment of all beauty, fame, and affluence. And therefore, those assembled in the wrestling arena became fully satisfied by glorifying what they had heard of him and were now seeing.
Any points here? So this is also described in the first canto. You remember the pastime of Narada, chapter 4, 5 and 6 of canto 1. So in the first canto, we see that when Narada first saw the Lord, he became completely overwhelmed. Why is everyone so late? I've been on late, but this is like an hour. So when he saw the Lord for the first time, all of his senses became overwhelmed. And it's described in the Bhagavatam that practically all the senses were merging. So it means that it's as if, and you may have this experience yourself sometimes, while you're chanting, if you've ever chanted in a very deep state of consciousness, you may experience that it's almost like your tongue and the chanting and your ears with the hearing and all of your senses, they become inundated with the holy name. Inundated with absorption in Krishna. And it's like all the senses almost merge and everything becomes a little, it's almost like it becomes hazy or it becomes just absorbed in bliss. And at that point in time, it's like the function of the individual senses almost disappears. And it's like everything just becomes absorbed in Krishna and all the senses just... Does anyone know what I'm talking about?
Yes.
Hands up if you know what I'm talking about. I mean, I'm not talking to like the highest level of prema, but to try to be a little bit pragmatic and practical. Does anyone know what I'm talking about? Sundar is doing, okay. Does anyone not know what I'm talking about? Hands up if you don't know what I'm talking about. Okay, so you haven't necessarily. Okay, so even when I was a new devotee, I'd only been a devotee like 1 or 2 years. I remember clearly the first time I went to Vrindavan, I'd only been a devotee for about 2 years at that time. I remember chanting on the roof of the Gurukul, and just suddenly while I was chanting and absorbing myself in the holy name, then suddenly everything just became bliss. And it was almost like my senses, my ears, all the senses just kind of disappeared. And it's just like, you know, you're just experiencing the holy name. And it's not, you kind of lose consciousness of everything else around you and just become fully absorbed. So what we experience is just something very slight. It's not like a high level of advancement or experience. But here it describes that the resonance of Mathura, when they see Krishna, their senses just become fully absorbed in him. So it means that Krishna is at a distance at this point in time. Krishna is in the wrestling arena. So while he's in the arena, all of the devotees, they are fully fixed on him. But it's like at the MCG. So you know how big the MCG is? Right, we're talking about a big arena. So this arena of Kamsa, that Kamsa has constructed within Mathura, it's on that scale, something like that. Like a huge arena, maybe bigger, but at least something of that magnitude. So Krishna and Balaram have walked in, so it means they're at a distance. You know, and you may not be able to even see them completely clearly. Just like when the cricket players or the football players walk on, you can see them, but you may not be able to, you know, if you're close by or if they come near your section, you may see them. So Krishna and Balaram have walked in, and it describes that everyone just becomes absorbed in them. Right? And we heard last week that as Krishna walks in, it describes he dances in. So Krishna is dancing into the arena, and it says Balaram is walking like a warrior. You know, with a tusk on his shoulder from Kubalaya Peed. And Krishna is dancing with the other one in. And as they walk in, the entire arena erupts in jubilation. And all of the citizens of Mathura, they begin to chant, Jai, Jai. And they become absorbed. And everyone begins to talk amongst themselves. Look, here they are. And they begin to discuss what they did. And everyone is just completely overwhelmed and absorbed. And as they see them, it describes here in this verse, it's very, very, very beautifully described. The people seem to be drinking Krishna and Balaram. So this is the kind of vision we need to develop by studying the Bhagavatam, by practicing Krishna consciousness, by chanting the holy name. It becomes so, your experience of Krishna or your absorption in Krishna becomes so deep. When you go and see the deity of Radha Balaba, Gaura-Nitai, Jagannath, Balaram, Subhadra, when you go and see the deities, it's like you're drinking them. You understand the concept? So absorbed, it's like you're... It's like they're emerging. Not like in an impersonal way, but it's like you're drinking them, just absorbing, relishing their forms. Not just looking at them haphazardly. Most of the time when we see the deities, we're not drinking their forms. We're not absorbed in their forms. So the Bhagavatam is teaching us the actual standard of bhakti, how we should be seeing the deities. Right? Most of the time we don't see the deities in a very deep way. We're very superficial. But we should be absorbed. And then it says, with their eyes, licking them with their tongues. Right? So it doesn't mean they're physically licking the lords, but feeling like that. You understand this concept? Just by seeing the deity, your sense of taste, you just feel like you want to relish Krishna. Like Krishna's whole body has become Shrikhand or something like that. You just want to relish like Krishna. That's how you feel. So it means all the senses are becoming somewhat absorbed. Just by seeing, it says Krishna himself, we sing in the morning, when we sing the prayers to the deities, that Krishna's senses are independent. In other words, when Krishna sees the offering that we offer to him, just by seeing the offering, Prabhupada explains this, he can taste the offering. By sight, he can taste. So this gives an idea that devotee can also be like this. When he's so absorbed in Krishna, just by seeing Krishna or hearing the holy name, we feel like we are tasting Krishna. And all the senses feel like they're, all five senses feel like they're almost becoming one apparatus to experience Krishna. Does it make sense? Right? I've experienced this myself to a very small degree while chanting. Sometimes like all the senses just have become locked, almost like they become absorbed, and you're just in the holy name and just you're experiencing bliss. I haven't experienced this for a long time. A long time ago, I had this experience several times. When you're a new devotee and you're uncomplicated and you chant the holy name, you get reciprocation. When you're an old devotee and you're complicated, you chant the holy name, you don't get reciprocation. Because we put our mind in between. But when you're a new devotee, you just chant. Right? You don't think, oh, this and this and this. But when you're an older devotee, then you chant, but then you think, oh, you know, and you complicate the process. So this is what the residents of Mathura are experiencing when they see Krishna. Smelling with their nostrils. So Krishna's aroma is wafting throughout the stadium, and all the residents are relishing the aroma of Krishna's fragrance, a transcendental aroma. Just like at the farm at the moment, there's one plant that's called Baronia. Anyone have that? You know that fragrance? Very powerful. And at the moment, you can smell it 50 meters away. Or even yesterday, I was going past our plum tree, and the plum tree is blossoming, and there is like a honey fragrance coming from the blossom from the plum tree at the moment. So very powerful. So when Krishna entered, everyone could experience the aroma of Krishna and Balaram. Right? And everyone's just attracted to that transcendental aroma, which is all attractive. And it says the people seem to be embracing them with their arms. So no one was actually embracing Krishna, because Krishna was a long way away. But everyone had that feeling in their heart. They just wanted to embrace Krishna and Balaram. They were so absorbed. So all of their senses just became enlivened simultaneously. It's almost like all the senses interchange. So it means with one sense, you're doing the function of every other sense. Every sense is doing the same thing. So it's almost like everything just becomes one. In other words, you just become absorbed in bliss and overwhelmed. Does it make sense? Okay. So if you've experienced this, that's nice. And if you haven't experienced this, we pray that you do soon. I haven't experienced what's going on here. I've had some glimpse. But what's going on here, this is full absorption in Krishna. Reminded of the Lord's beauty, character, charm, and bravery, the members of the audience began describing these features to one another according to what they had seen and heard. So, it describes in the purport, Krishna and Balaram are the embodiment of all beauty, fame, and opulence.
So, opulence.
Yeah, fame, opulence, beauty. So everything is there within Krishna. And it's saying within the verse, the Lord's beauty, his character, the charm, and the bravery, it completely captivates. So even one of these qualities is powerful enough to captivate. Krishna is shows the greatest degree of bravery in his pastimes. So because of the bravery which Krishna shows, I mean, he's walking into a wrestling arena, right? Two of them are walking in, surrounded by a few friends, into a wrestling arena, which is surrounded by hundreds and thousands of Kamsa's soldiers and army. So how brave you must be. Because you know, Kamsa could order all of his army to attack simultaneously. Krishna and Balaram, they know no fear. So even this one quality. But then you put all of Krishna's qualities together. What other qualities are mentioned here?
Beauty, character, charm, and bravery.
Yeah, beauty.
Character.
Yeah, so his beauty. That's enough to captivate everyone. When someone's beautiful but they're not very brave, what happens? Oh, if someone's very beautiful, right, but they're not very brave, we think, oh, they're very beautiful, but then they run away. And we think, okay, well, they're beautiful, but they're not very brave. So we lose attraction to them. But if they're beautiful, we see someone, we think, oh, they're so beautiful, but then they're so brave as well, we become twice as attracted to them. So Krishna has all of the qualities to the greatest degree. And then... charm. What does charm mean, Mitesh? Charming. What does that mean? Right. Charming means by the way they speak, by their countenance, by their behavior, by their so many different attributes, they charm, which means they bewilder the mind. Therefore, Krishna's name is Rama. Rama means the reservoir of
pleasure.
Right? He can captivate the mind of any personality. So therefore, he is charming. So he has all of these qualities, right, to the highest degree. So that's why when he walks in, naturally when someone has all of these qualities, so the mind of the person just becomes absorbed. So everyone, so, and this shows that he is Krishna. Krishna means all attractive. He walks into the wrestling arena, and the hundreds and thousands of people are simultaneously completely captivated by him. No one else can do this to this degree. So, it describes, Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur describes that everyone starts talking about Krishna and Balaram. Oh, that is them. No? We have not met them before. We have not seen them before. But we have heard they did this, they did that. He lifted the great hill. He defeated Indra's pride. Right? He performed so many activities. Yesterday he broke the bowl, the sacrificial bowl, which was given by Lord Shiva to Parashuram, to Kamsa. Right? So that bowl, which the whole town was worshipping to get protection for Mathura, he just snapped it in half. Picked it up with one hand and then threw it around and then just snapped the whole thing. So everyone is talking about him. So basically, the effect is that when Krishna appears, everyone begins to hear, chant, and remember him. Shravanam, Kirtanam, Smaranam. Right? And that is the effect of associating with Krishna. When you associate with Krishna, you want to hear, chant, and remember him more and more. Just like this week's World Holy Name Week. So we have to hear, chant, and remember Krishna more. Hare Krishna. Any points? Speak loudly so they can.
Their conversations also referred to Madhurya Rasa, not Krishna himself, gopis, because they had heard of his sidelong glances. He mentioned that though they were not qualified to talk about them, still they were conversing. As they saw Krishna.
Yeah, some of the conversations. Like that. Oh. Yeah. Not like everyone just started speaking about the gopis simultaneously, but some. Anything else?
So, they're entering. The other boys with them?
The cowboys?
Yes.
Yeah, they're behind them.
So, they're also fearless, which...
Yeah, because they're with Krishna.
Because they're with Krishna, so it's just another point. Right?
Yeah, because if anything happens, they can hide behind Krishna. So. Okay. Any other points? The people said, "These two boys are certainly expansions of the Supreme Lord Narayana, and they have descended to this world in the home of Vasudev." So the residents of Mathura are describing Krishna and Balaram to be expansions of Narayana. So that's a nice way to see Krishna and Balaram. However, we have a higher understanding of Krishna and Balaram. That Narayana is the expansion of Krishna and Balaram. So we see them like that. Whereas the residents of Mathura, it's nice. They're seeing Krishna and Balaram, they must be as powerful as Narayana himself. As powerful as God himself. No, but we see it the other way. And we see that Krishna is the source of Narayana. Even in some of the Puranas, in the Vishnu Purana, it describes that Krishna and Balaram are a black and white hair on the body of Mahavishnu. And then when Mahavishnu creates the creation, then that black and white hair, they expand into But that's not our understanding. Our understanding is based on the Bhagavatam. Ete cham sakala pumsa. Krishna is the original personality. That's our understanding.
I heard Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was Gaurinarayan
Yeah. This one, Krishna took birth from Mother Devaki and was brought to Gokula, where he has remained concealed all this time, growing up in the house of King Nanda. He made Putana and the whirlwind demon meet with death, pulled down the twin Arjuna trees, and killed Shankachuda, Keshi, Dhanuka, and similar demons. He saved the cows and the cow herds from a forest fire and subdued the serpent Kaliya. He removed Lord Indra's false pride by holding up the best of mountains with one hand for an entire week, thus protecting the inhabitants of Gokul from rain, wind, and hail. The gopis overcame all kinds of distress and experienced great happiness by seeing his face, which is always cheerful with smiling glances and ever free of fatigue. So here the residents of Mathura are describing the glances they've heard about that Krishna gives to the gopis. Now it describes here that Krishna's face is always free from fatigue. So what does that mean? Yeah, it means Krishna is beyond the three modes of material nature. Hands up if you have experienced fatigue in this lifetime. Hands up if you have experienced fatigue today.
Yeah.
Hands up if your fatigue is there every day and doesn't go away. Because Prabhupada says, this is one of my favorite quotes from Prabhupada, he says, the material world is like hard wood, and we must learn to chisel Krishna out of that hard wood. Very nice quote from Prabhupada. So that is our life in the material world, I think. I don't know if anyone is having this experience here tonight. But my life is like that. It feels like it is hard wood. It feels like I'm fatigued all the time. This year in particular, actually. I felt, for some reason, my... material energy is pushing like this.
Me too, probably.
What's that?
Me too.
You too, yeah. You even more than me. At least I have an excuse, I'm still young, but you're old, so. But that is the nature of the material energy. It just gives fatigue. Mm-hmm. So you have to find people in this world who are not fatigued. And who is that? Yeah, it's either Krishna or very advanced devotees. Because Prabhupada was like that. Hari Sori said that he was traveling with Prabhupada all over the world. And Hari Sori was much younger than Prabhupada. Hari Sori was in his 20s. Prabhupada was in his 70s. Right? And he said that Prabhupada never got jet lag. Right? He never saw Prabhupada get jet lag, ever. Yeah, we just fly from here to Tasmania and we get jet lag. What does it mean? We go to India, or you come back from India, or if you go across somewhere else, you know, we get jet lag. It takes us a day or two to recover. Sometimes you sleep, come back from India, the sleep doesn't go back for 2 weeks.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Or my auntie, she went to Europe, she came back, she said for 2 months, couldn't get back into the same sleep pattern.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But Prabhupada was not like that. Everywhere Prabhupada went, constantly, right? All the travel he did, but he never... experienced what appeared to be material fatigue.
Should the Kirti write the same thing?
Yeah, Yeah, Prabhupada was like above that. So, that means you have to associate with someone who is beyond fatigue. So there's Krishna and Krishna's pure devotees. But everyone else, we are identifying with this material energy and all that. Yeah. I try very hard to get above the modes of nature, but somehow I just can't do it. I just can't get above the modes of nature. I try very hard. I just can't transcend. Because then sometimes I think, oh, I'm feeling fatigued, but if I just understand I'm not my body, it'll all go away. But I try to understand that, but it doesn't work. So Prabhupada is like that. So at least associate with those who are like that. So Krishna is beyond fatigue. So it says, the gopis overcame all kind of distress and experienced great happiness by seeing his face. So we can surpass all the obstacles in this world by remembering Krishna. Chaitanya Charitamrita says, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami says that if you remember Lord Chaitanya, that means Lord Chaitanya or Krishna, if you remember Lord Chaitanya, even the most difficult thing will become easy. And if you forget Lord Chaitanya, even the most easy thing will become difficult. Does anyone have realization on this? Hare Krishna. If you remember the Lord, then everything becomes easy. Be blissful. Even when everything is very difficult in this world, but you feel blissful. You feel detached. But if you forget the Lord, even the most simple things have become so difficult. So that is what is being mentioned here. Absorb yourself in Krishna, and then because he is free from fatigue, you will feel relief. Krishna or his pure devotees. Any points?
Shruti Kirti Prabhu also writes that you can massage Prabhupada's back with any strength and he never winced even. So strong.
Yeah, Prabhupada was very strong for his age. That's what
I was listening to a lecture sometime ago and there it was mentioned that we can only sustain pure austerity in line with our purity. So if we try for any austerities beyond our purity, we will not be able to sustain it. Like you were talking about fatigue and jet lag and also it will always go in line and line with our purity. So if we try, like we try to imitate sometimes when we see other devotees are able to do something, then we try to imitate, but if our purity, like, you know, Shakti Vasandat Maharaj, when he gave the seminar on cultural purity, in Melbourne, he was saying that one who is not pure in action cannot be pure in perfect. He was giving that sequence which Shakti Vasandat Maharaj. So if all that is not in place, he will not be able to sustain any austerity that
he might try to do. Good point. Anything else?
It's the same as pure devotee, maybe.
What is it?
If you talk about purity, it means you said that Krishna is pure devotee. So that depends on purity.
It is said that under his full protection, the Yadu dynasty will become extremely famous and will attain wealth, glory, and power. So does this verse remind you of any other verse? Bhagavad Gita, which verse? Which verse is it? Chapter 18, verse number?
79.
78. Yeah, verse 79. Is not written. It finishes at 78. But it says, wherever there is Krishna, who is Yogeshwara, Yogeshwara means the master of mystics. Wherever there is Arjuna, who is Dhanuradhara, the carrier of Gandiva, there will never be No, it doesn't say there will never be. It says there will always be victory, extraordinary power, morality, and opulence. So those four things will always be there. So that's how you know Krishna is present. So you know when you're preaching or you're doing service or whatever is taking place, if you're doing it with the right attitude for Krishna, with the right type of devotion for Krishna, then these four things will be there. It'll be extraordinary power. You'll see devotees sometimes do amazing things, extraordinary things. So extraordinary power will be there. There will be opulence, which means things will manifest by Krishna's grace. There will be morality, means devotees behave properly. And there will be victory. Devotees will succeed. So this is when Krishna is remembered, when he is present. This verse is very similar in the Bhagavatam. It says that under the protection of Krishna, Mathura will become famous and attain wealth, glory, and power. Similar to the Bhagavatam. So when you remember Krishna, all these things become manifest. When you forget Krishna, it disappears. This lotus-eyed elder brother of his, Lord Balaram, is the proprietor of all transcendental opulences. He has killed Pralamba, Vatsika, Baka, and other demons. Jogi, you want to read?
In fact, two of the demons mentioned here were killed by Krishna, not Balaram. The reason for the mistake is that as news of Krishna's exploits spread among the ordinary people, the fact became somewhat muddled. The same tendency can be observed in modern newspapers.
Any points?
We attended a retreat at Bhaktira Sandhana in Glasgow in Sydney on the culture of speech. So Maharaj, amongst various things, one of the points was that people tend to, when something happens, and people put, they say, he didn't mention it in the same way, but communication can get disrupted down the line. People hear something, then they communicate this something, someone else adds something, and the whole message gets destroyed. Who has killed, who is completely distorted in the minds of the Mathuravasis.
How many devotees were there?
150. Quite
excited. Same place as last year?
No, different place.
Different place. So we're seeing here, because they're remembering Krishna, but then things are beginning a little bit muddled up. They say Balaram killed Bakasura. But Balaram didn't kill Bakasura. But people are, that's okay. Everyone's just a little bit excited. So being a little bit excited, they may say something. But, you know, the problem is then some people distort things and things become watered down or obscured. We have to be very careful of that. When we present the philosophy, it always has to be fortified or under the jurisdiction or supported by Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra. So you have to be able to prove it. If you say anything, you have to prove it. You have to tell the devotees, where does that come from? You know Nisringa Kavacha Prabhu? Yeah, all the time he says this. Where is that? Sometimes I give class, and then after class he says, where was that? Yeah, one time he said to me about five different things. Where was that? And I said, where's that? And I said, and where is that? And I said, well, that was there. And he said, but where was that? Like that. So the point of it, it's a good point, actually. And he taught me on several occasions. You have to prove where these things are. Otherwise, you cannot speak it. Unless you can say a guru has said it, Shastra has said it, or the sadhu has said it, then you cannot repeat that. So you have to be authorized all the time. So here everyone's excited. It's not a big problem. But the basic point is, you must keep things accurate. That's what the Bhagavatam is teaching us. That's why Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur says, actually, Krishna didn't kill Bakasura. But everyone's so excited, they said, oh.
Maharaj said that he is the proprietor of all transcendental
proprietor
opulences. Because Krishna is the one proprietor of all transcendental opulences.
No, Balaram is true.
Yeah, but they're equal.
Huh?
Are they equal?
No, they're not equal. Balak Krishna is Krishna and Balaram is Balaram, but...
Yeah, but Krishna, Alta Krishna is because
of Balaram. Yeah, but think about how powerful Balaram is.
Yeah.
The whole spiritual world emanates from Balaram.
Okay.
So how powerful is Balaram? Balaram is all powerful. Prabhupada, there's no difference between the two of them. That's how powerful Balaram is. Is it okay?
Yeah.
Okay. While the people talked in this way and the musical instruments resounded, the wrestler, Chanura, addressed Krishna and Balaram with the following words. Chanura said, O son of Nanda, O Rama, you two are well respected by courageous men and are both skillful in wrestling. Having heard of your prowess, the king has called you here, wanting to see for himself. Subjects of the king who try to please him with their thoughts, acts, and words are sure to achieve good fortune. But those who fail to do so will suffer the opposite fate. So the point is that we should always try to please our leaders, which means spiritually and institutionally as well. ISKCON has two lines of authority. We have a spiritual line of authority and an institutional line of authority. So you have to please both authorities. And, you know, much of the time then, the institutional authorities, like the temple president and the authorities that we work under within the institution, they're also our spiritual authorities. So we have spiritual faith in them also, if they're qualified. But we have to... You have to please both and you have to work under them and follow their instructions. This is the way to advance. So Chanura is saying you have to follow the king. Because that is the system, in the Vedic system. You have to follow the king, you have to follow the leader. And these days we don't have a king, so who do we follow? Spiritual master, the gurus, the sannyasis, and the temple authorities. So you follow. That's the system. You have to follow the leader. So Chanura is saying you have to follow. So why don't Krishna and Balaram listen to Chanura?
Because the king is unqualified.
Very good. Because the king is unqualified. So there's one very nice book which came out after Lord Chaitanya left this planet. What was the name of the book? It's called Sri Krishna Bhajanamrita by Narahari Chakravarti Thakur. You know Narahari Chakravarti?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Who is he? Sanja Arti we sing, Gaura Arti. What do we sing? Yeah. What is that line?
Narahari Adikori Chamara Dulaya.
So he's mentioned in that. He was an associate of Lord Chaitanya. So he used to hold the chamara and wave when Lord Chaitanya was being worshipped like that. So when Lord Chaitanya left the world, there was chaos. It actually mentions that whenever a great acharya leaves, there will be chaos. You'll see, when Prabhupada left, what happened? There were some problems. There was. In the 80s in ISKCON, there was a lot of problems. A lot of problems. So when a big acharya leaves, a powerful personality leaves, it's predicted there will be chaos. Whatever in Prabhupada's guru, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur left. There was chaos. There was a big fight took place in the Gaudiya Math. Two people said, the Gaudiya Math belongs to me, I am the acharya, and then there was dispute like that. A fire in the mutt. So when Lord Chaitanya left, there was also problems. There was confusion after he left. The teachings become somewhat obscured. So at certain points in time, sometimes the spiritual authorities or the gurus do not act properly. And Narahari Chakravarti Thakur, he wrote one nice book called Krishna Bhajanamrita, and he says in the book He says when the authority begins to act outside of the teachings of the Lord, he must be rejected. So we must reject. Right? If the guru is not qualified, if he stops following the regulative principles, if he stops following the teachings of his guru, of the founder Acharya, right, of the Lord himself, we have to reject. That's the system. So it means we have to be very intelligent ourselves. We can't blindly follow. So Kamsa is supposed to be rejected. Right? Maybe he's the king, but he's not qualified. So therefore you cannot follow that kind of a king. So Chanura is saying, you have to follow the king. You have to do everything to please the king. Normally, yes, you do everything to please the king. But in this circumstance, you do not. But Krishna and Balaram say, okay, we will do everything to please him. He wants a wrestling match? Okay, we'll give him a wrestling match. And we'll kill you guys, and then we'll jump up there and we'll kill him as well. So we will please the king. He wants a wrestling match, he's going to get one. But it's not going to turn out the way that he is expecting or hoping. Any points? Okay. It is well known that cowherd boys are always joyful as they tend their calves, and that the boys playfully wrestle with each other while grazing their animals in the various forests. So it says cowherd boys are?
Wrestlers.
Wrestlers, yes. And what else does it say? Always joyful. That's why if you come to Hare Krishna Valley, everyone is always joyful. Because we're the cows. Just like there's one cow there, her name is Kunti. She's going to give birth, maybe tonight. Another calf is about to appear. And Ekadashi, maybe the next week she'll give birth. And 1 week, 1 month ago on Baladev Purnim, Varuni was born. From Aruni, her mother. So it's very joyful. Cowboys are very joyful. We go in the morning. My wife goes in the morning, and they clean the goshala every morning. After they've been there all night, they clean all the dung and everything out. And they're very happy. You see, when they come back, everyone's very happy. Mani Griever and my wife and cowherd people. They're very happy. And it says they like to wrestle. So it describes in the spiritual world, every morning, Krishna milks the cows. And then after they milk the cows, they go to the wrestling.
Arena.
Yeah, it's not like an arena like Kamsa's arena. It's like a
ground.
Yeah, ground. What would you call it? Like a
square.
Yeah, like a place where they go.
Wrestling pit.
Yeah, like a pit. Yeah, it's like a fence. Right? And Krishna jumps in. Right? He's after they finish milking the cows on the way back up the hill to Nandagram before they go up and have breakfast. He jumps in. And who else jumps in? His arch rival, who is? Sri Dharma. Who is Sri Dharma? Radharani's older brother. He's very powerful. So he gets in. Half the boys, they cheer for Sri Dharma, and half the boys cheer for Krishna. And Krishna says, I'm like a bull. No one can defeat me. Sri Dharma says, you are not powerful. I am the son of Vrishabhanu Maharaj. You will see the real power. And then they hit each other like bulls, it says. They charge each other, Krishna and Sri Dharma. And they lock, and they throw. And sometimes Sri Dharma picks Krishna up and throws him on the ground. Right? And then Krishna picks up Sri Dharma and smashes him like that. And at the end, you can't really tell who won because they're both very powerful. At the end, they start walking up the hill to have breakfast. And Sri Dharma says, just see, I won again. Krishna said, you did not win. He said, I was the champion today. And so they always have these. Right? So this is part of cowherd life. Krishna is simply enjoying in the spiritual world. Right? There's no work there. Down here you have to work.
A lot.
Huh?
A lot.
A lot, yeah. You have to work for NAB. or Telstra or yourself, but it all ends in one thing, suffering. For in the spiritual world, it's just play. There's no work, right? Everything's free. Right? After you finish Krishna and Sri Dharma are wrestling and you watch, then you go up the hill. Either you're on top of the hill helping cooking, or you're down there and you walk back up with the boys, right? And then you just have free breakfast.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then after breakfast, everyone goes out, serves Krishna, does more service, then free lunch. And then come back at night, free dinner. Best prasad. Right? And no one gets overweight. Eat as much as you want, and you don't get overweight. Right? The best life. Everyone's just happy all the time. Mm-hmm. But down here, just suffering. Hare Krishna. Okay. Therefore, let's do what the king wants. Everyone will be pleased with us and the king, for the king embodies all living beings. So once again, it is natural to surrender to authority. And actually, this is one of the key principles of Vedic culture. Vedic culture is based upon... If you look at the Vedic civilization, right, there are several key principles which are underlying or primary principles within the Vedic civilization. And one of the principles which makes the Vedic civilization successful is respect for elders, yeah, authority. Respect for authority. And then Kali Yuga, that is being destroyed. Right? Respect for authority. You even see, like, in the children, you know, look at the way your kids speak to you. Like that. You see all the kids, the way your children speak to you. Things haven't changed that much, but I would not have spoken to my parents the way my daughter speaks to me. The things she says and gets away with, I would not have said. And what my parents would have said to their parents, no way. What I said, no way they would have got away with. And then if you go back another generation, somehow it's just all, and you can't even punish them anymore. Like the way my parents used to punish me, if I punished my daughter like that, it'd be like a whole thing. You know? But my father just said, hey. He was just like heavy. You know, and it was good. You know, I do that now, and then my daughter goes, oh, you can't say that. It's like a whole... I've got rights. You know? Well, it's a totally different mentality. You know? So respect for authority is diminishing, as Kali Yuga goes. So in ISKCON, right, it is important, and Prabhupada said this himself. Prabhupada said that... I know that you do not like to be instructed. He was speaking to his disciples. He said, I know you do not like to be instructed. But he said, but it is my duty, I must say it. It's true. In Kali Yuga, people don't like to hear it. But to make advancement in spiritual life, you have to accept authority. And you have to accept the kind words as well as the unpleasant words. Or the instructions. Sometimes the authorities have to get on your case. And if you don't like it, then you can't advance in spiritual life. So we have to accept authority. So this is the nature of Vedic civilization. In the Vedic times, people just accepted. You know, an authority could say things and you would just be like that. These days, you know, we're not so humble, so qualified. But still, we have to accept authority if you want to advance in Krishna consciousness. Any points? Okay. Hearing this, Lord Krishna, who liked to wrestle and welcome the challenge, replied with words appropriate to the time and place. So how does it describe Krishna here?
Perfect.
He likes to welcome challenges. It specifically says he likes to wrestle. Krishna is a wrestler. So it's interesting because Vaishnavas, devotees, there are three sports Which devotees are allowed to participate in. Or you could say three recreational activities. What are the three recreational activities which are bona fide for devotees?
Gardening.
Gardening.
Swimming.
Swimming. And wrestling. These three you're allowed to do. Gardening, wrestling, and swimming. These three. They're considered Vaishnava sports, appropriate recreation for the devotees.
What about dancing?
What is that?
Dancing.
Yeah, dancing is considered, yeah, also. Yeah. Or you could say only those three do not dance. No, you can do dancing as well. These three considered. The devotee wants to have some recreation, go and do some gardening, do some wrestling, or do some swimming. They're considered acceptable for devotees.
Wrestling, I've not heard.
What's that?
Wrestling, I've never heard of
Vaishnava
wrestling.
You've never heard of Vaishnava wrestling?
Yeah, that's not right. Actually. Wrestling, how can... Wrestling?
How do you know it's not right?
Now, who is doing wrestling?
Maybe for Matijis it is not right. For Prabhujis, you cannot comment. In the Brahmacharya Ashram, we used to wrestle all the time. Sometimes I just walk down there, I open the door and I say, come, all of you. Come. Actually, sometimes Rasik, you know Rasik?
Yeah.
Yeah, Rasik's quite strong. He's done some martial arts training. Sometimes he wrestles with me. At Holi last year, he jumped on the, you know, we had the jumping castles. So he grabbed me, threw me down, and he started wrestling me. That's good. A Vaishnava sport. I sent a text to Annie Rudapur and said I just have to do some wrestling, put my phone down and jumped in. Vaishnava sports, okay. You can do it. So Krishna likes to wrestle. Lord Krishna said, although forest dwellers, we are also subjects of the Bhoja King. We must gratify his desires, for such behavior will confer upon us the greatest benefit. So Krishna is saying, we will obey Kamsa. We will obey Kamsa. But actually Krishna is going to destroy Kamsa. It actually says, you know, in the Bhagavatam, in the next chapter, next couple of chapters, Krishna actually attacks Kamsa. It says he jumps up onto the royal dais, where Kamsa is, like a lion. Actually, today I was at the farm. I was looking out my window while I was preparing class. I don't know what was on the ground, maybe a lizard or something. And this, kookaburras, like bird. You know, it gave me a realization what Garuda is like. He just came out of the sky. Sort of just came down. I don't know what he grabbed. You know, I thought maybe it was a snake or something, but it must be a lizard. And he just grabbed him. And then he saw him just go, and then he just flew off. So Krishna was like that. It says that on Kamsa's dais, Kamsa was on the royal dais, Krishna jumped up there like a lion and grabbed him. Right, and then they wrestled. But it doesn't say in the Bhagavatam, but actually the fight took 2 hours. Krishna and Kamsa. It wasn't like a quick fight. In the Bhagavatam, it says he jumps up and then it says he throws him down and he just kills him. But it actually went for 2 hours, that the whole fight between Kamsa and... Imagine everyone was watching. Right. One of the boys jumps up and grabs the king, right, and then starts smashing him. So Krishna says, we will obey. If the king wants, we will obey. But he's going to smash the king.
How long was the fight between Chandra and Krishna?
I'm not sure how long it says. I'm not sure. Time frame, but yeah, it was some time. It says in the last chapter when Krishna fought with the army, when he broke the bow and then the army attacked, it said that fight took 2 hours. Yeah, so many soldiers came, so Krishna and Balan, but they had the bows and they just kept smashing everyone, right? And then more soldiers came and they smashed them, so that took 2 hours. And there was like piles of bodies everywhere. Krishna's smashing. There's like bodies lying everywhere. And then Krishna and Balaram just walked out and they're just looking around the city and just kept walking. These are real heroes. Krishna says, oh, I will obey the king. Just like before you kill someone, you know, you're very nice to him, say, yes, yes, I will obey you. And then you smash them. Yeah.
Are these two brothers, are they strong enough to compete with Krishna's
brother?
Because if you hear about all
the
other demons, they are much more powerful than these people.
No, these two are very powerful.
More powerful than other demons, which Krishna
reports. Similar. Chinnura and Mushtika are very powerful. Very powerful. Kamsa brought them under control, actually. Because they were wrestlers. So Kamsa said, okay, wrestle me. And then he defeated them. So that's why they were obedient to Kamsa.
Right.
There's a whole story of who they were in their previous life. So. We are just young boys and should play with those of equal strength. The wrestling match must go on properly so that irreligion does not taint the respectable members of the audience. So this is Kshatriya Dharma. Mm-hmm. Kshatriya Dharma means you can only fight with an equal. Mm-hmm. This was at the Battle of Kurukshetra, before the battle began. Then they made rules. They wrote some rules for the battle. And then they sent the rules to, I think, Bhishma, because he was the grandsire. So he wrote the rules, and then he sent them across to Yudhishthira's camp. And they read them, and they said, okay, we accept. So one of the rules on the battlefield, you can only fight with an equal. Right? You can't kill someone who's, you know, not your match. Yeah. So if a chariot warrior is fighting a chariot warrior, you know, you have to fight someone who's equal. Or if someone has a weapon, you only can fight with that same weapon. You can't just come in with something else. The Kshatriya Dharma.
They were not equal, actually. From
a Madhugino, Krishna is the supreme lord, but then later on, even Mathura Asi, they are just two young boys who are being asked to wrestle with someone much more superior in age and better strength, apparently. Mm.
Yeah.
That's why Krishna Balaram was saying now. Mm. They're saying, we're just boys, you can't expect us to fight with you. Mm. Chanura said, you aren't really a child or even a young man. And neither is Balaram, the strongest of the strong. After all, you playfully killed an elephant who had the strength of 1,000 other elephants. So they walked in with the tusks of the elephant on their shoulders as they walked in. And then what did they do to Kamsa? They walked up to where he was, the royal dais. Right? They walked up, they didn't even look at him in the eye. That's very disrespectful, right? If you walk into a place, you know, if the king is there, you look at the king and you bow like that. They didn't even look at him. They just walked in, but they walked over to where he was. He was sitting up there. So they just walked in and they just looked around and they got the tusks and they put them in the ground. Both of them smashed them into the ground. Right? And then they just walked off, like in defiance. I didn't even look at him. Just like smashed it and walked away. And then they went to the wrestlers. Right? And they had a conversation with the wrestlers. Right? That's how powerful they are. Just totally disrespect the king. Therefore, you too should fight powerful wrestlers. There's certainly nothing unfair about that. You, O descendant of Rishni, can show your prowess against me, and Balaram can fight with Mushtika. So when these two boys entered the arena, right, it said there were 12 rasas, right, and 10 rasas were manifest in the arena. And it describes how everyone in the arena saw Krishna and Balaram. So how did Chanura and Mushtik see them? Yeah, fear. Death, that was more Kamsa. Yeah. It said they saw them as lightning bolts. In other words, when they walked in, they thought, who are these boys? Walking with the elephant's tusks on their shoulders. Right? So they knew they're like lightning bolts. They're ready to destroy them. Great warriors. They gave them great respect because they're great warriors. Okay.